This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in this week for Terry Gross. My guest, Rabbi Michael Shudrick, has spent much of his career working to revive a once-thriving culture that all but vanished decades ago, the Jewish community of Poland. Poland was for centuries the closest thing to a Jewish homeland in Europe. Before the Second World War, the country was home to 3.5 million Jews. They were 10% of Poland's population and represented a fourth or more of the inhabitants of its largest cities. But the German invasion in 1939 made Poland a center of extermination for European Jews. Most of the Nazi death camps were located there. Soon after the fall of communism in 1989, Michael Shudrick moved to Warsaw on behalf of the Ronald S. Lauder Foundation, which seeks to rebuild Jewish communities in Eastern Europe. Shudrick has spent most of the last 17 years in Poland, working to revive religious practice and build Jewish cultural institutions. Though he grew up in New York, Shudrick is now the chief rabbi of Poland. I spoke to him last week. Well, Michael Shudrick, welcome to Fresh Air. What was left of the Jewish community in Poland as the war ended?
1939, 3.5 million Jews. By the end of 1944, 90% of those 3.5 million Jews are no longer alive, murdered by the German Nazi regime. It still leaves, after World War II, 10% alive. 10% of 3.5 million is 350,000 Jews still alive in Poland at the end of the war. Many had survived by fleeing into the Soviet Union, returning to Poland in the years just after the war. But most of those Jews realized rather quickly that they needed to make a choice. If they wanted to maintain their Jewish identity, it made sense to leave Poland. Poland, which became a communist country, Poland, which had horrible memories for them inflicted by the German occupiers, and also too much anti-Semitism. Still, as before the war, there was anti-Semitism. After the war, there was anti-Semitism. And so it led to the realization of Jewish survivors that if you want to maintain your Jewish identity, it makes sense to leave Poland. And the vast majority left. But some stayed. And those who stayed agreed with those who left that if I want to stay Jewish, I should leave Poland. But if I want to stay in Poland, I should then leave being Jewish. And because of the communist regime and because of some element of anti-Semitism in Poland, some tens of thousands of Jews stayed but no longer maintained their Jewish identity to the extent that they often never even told their children or grandchildren. So you had a couple hundred thousand survivors that left over 25 years and some thousands, tens of thousands that stayed, many of them giving up their Jewish identity. And only in 1989, with the collapse of the communist system, did these hidden Jewish survivors begin to tell their children, their grandchildren, that you know something? I was once a Jew. And so the story of the contemporary Jewish community today is really about one of discovery.
When you went in 1990, I gather a lot of people were just beginning to discover that they were Jewish or ask the question, might I be Jewish? And I'm curious sort of what prompted people to ask those questions and what sort of stories and experiences did you note among those who were seeking their heritage?
Every person is an individual case. But I'll tell you one story. There's a young woman that came to me when she was 17, and she told me that she asked me, am I Jewish? She says, my mother's 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 mother was Jewish. And she was the last one in my family that actually was actively Jewish. And my grandmother told my mother, when grandma was on her deathbed, that before I die, I want you to know my daughter, that my mother's mother was a Jew. And then grandma died. Mom waited a couple of years to tell me till I was 16. She told me. I became curious. I found somebody in my high school who was Jewish. I said, what do you do? And she says, we go to the Lauder camp. And then she told me that, and that she came to the Lauder camp at the end of the camp, that she felt something come alive in her she never felt before.
Now, explain what you mean by the Lauder camp.
It was a summer program that we ran for exactly these kinds of people, Poles who were discovering their Jewish roots, who were interested in learning more. In other words, very important principle is non-coercive. If someone discovers they're Jewish but says, hey, that no longer speaks to me, that's not who I am, that's their decision. And They have the right to make that decision. But if somebody says, hey, you know, I want to learn something about it, then we have created a spectrum of programs that give these people a chance to be able to taste, to learn, to experience, to be inspired by by Jewish tradition, by Jewish culture. And so this young woman said she came to the Lauder camp, and she said she felt something come alive her she never felt before. And as a rabbi, I could say that we call that as the spark of the Jewish soul. That what is really going on in Poland today is something fundamentally very spiritual. It's people looking for something that they realized was missing in their lives. When they discover that they're Jewish, they realize that there's this spiritual void they've always felt, and now they want to look to fill it. Which is interesting because it leads people to a more traditional practice often, not always, but often, than you may find in the United States.
I read that some people are inclined to inquire about their heritage if they discover that they have many, many ancestors who are dead and no one's ever explained why. Is that right?
Right. If one wants to understand in one little short sentence the impact of the Holocaust, is that one of the ways people realize that they have Jewish roots is when grandma has no living relatives. While Poles suffered and were killed during the war by Nazis, 3 million non-Jewish Poles were killed, it wasn't 90%. And so when you realize that grandma or dad has no living relatives, that's usually a very strong indication that they're really Jewish.
When one goes to a service, I gather there are services in several Polish cities now.
Yes.
What's the age of the people participating?
Okay. I am 51 years old. In the daily service in Warsaw, I'm usually the oldest person. The average age is probably the median age is probably 32, 33. That's true for Warsaw. It's true in Łódź, in Lodz, it's probably 45. In Krakow, it's older. In Wrocław, it's somewhere in the middle. But as things grow, what we're finding is that the younger and younger people are coming. On a normal Shabbat, Saturday morning in Warsaw, we'll have, without any of the visitors, we'll have 70 to 80, 90 of our own people, probably about 15 people under the age of 13.
You know, as a Jewish community has begun to emerge in Poland, I wonder what your sense is of to what extent Jews and Catholics in the country have come to some common understanding of what happened in the Holocaust. I mean, Polish, non-Jewish Poles consider themselves, you know, in some ways among the most, the victims of the war who suffered the most, 3 million dead, you know, at the hands of the Nazis. But, you know, some have seen them as willing collaborators or themselves instigators of terrible anti-Semitic violence. And I'm wondering to what extent, as the Jewish community has emerged, that discussion has been generated and what it's produced.
You're really touching upon something that is very important and also very sensitive. Part of the problem stems from the fact that there was no normal, natural contact between Poles and Jews for 50 years, between 39 and 89. There were some contacts, but kind of in an open, ongoing, normal way. That very old, nearly 1,000-year relationship, with its positive and its negative side. But for 1,000 years, until 1939, Poles and Jews had an animated relationship, sometimes better, sometimes worse, but it was a real day-to-day living relationship. And whatever the problems were real. There was nothing abstract about it. And since 1989, we're struggling, both Jews and Poles, kind of struggling to find how to restart that relationship, how to restart that dialogue, which was not always good, which had its problems, also had its good times, had its good points. And since, considering it's only 1989, only 18 years ago, incredible, incredible changes to the positive. Poles are now much more open to understanding that the Jewish suffering cannot be compared to the Polish suffering. That, as horrible and painful as it is for a Pole to hear this, there were Poles who collaborated. And that's something that Poland is beginning and has made significant steps in recognizing. It doesn't mean it's universal. It doesn't mean everybody does. On the other hand, Jews have begun to realize that Poles also suffered during the war. I, as a young person, as a child, even in my university years, don't remember learning that 3 million non-Jewish Poles, that number today is questioned, it may be not quite that big, but a significant number of non-Jewish Poles were murdered during World War II. I didn't know that. And so more Jews are becoming aware of the fact that there's a sensitivity to the suffering of the Poles. We're not playing a comparative game here. From the historical aspect, there is no comparison. 90% Polish Jews murdered by German Nazis and collaborators. 3 million Jews out of the 6 million. But yet, that doesn't mean that we Jews also don't need to be sensitive to another nation that lost 3 million fathers and mothers and sons and daughters.
There was an incident last May which has gotten a lot of attention where you were, I think, walking near a synagogue, maybe on your way to services, and you were—
On your way back from services.
On your way back from services, and you were insulted and attacked by an anti-Semitic man. What happened?
Okay. So it was on a beautiful sunny May afternoon, walking after services. I was walking with five young people in their 20s and 30s and two little kids, 5 and 7 years old. And a man, also, I thought he was in his 20s. It turns out he was in his 30s, yelled at us, "Poles for Poland." It was a well-known anti-Semitic pre-World War II slogan, which the whole slogan is "Poles for Poland, Jews to Palestine," meaning Jews get out of Poland. And I've heard such things before, once, twice a year. And when I do hear them, if the situation is right, I confront the person because I see no reason to ignore it and I see no reason to run away. So I confronted him and I said, "Why do you say that?" And for the first time, and I've been in Poland a fairly long time since 1990, for the first time, rather than responding verbally, he hit me. And I responded, as I like to say, went into New York mode, and I hit him back. I don't know why I did that, but I have to say that is certainly one very appropriate response when somebody hits you. Hit him back, at which point he had pepper spray and sprayed me in my face, started to run, and I chased after him. He ran faster than I did, which is probably a good thing, because I have no idea what I would have done if I would have caught him. as serendipity would have it, it happened at a very interesting juncture in the year, because the next day, Pope Benedict the 16th was going to Auschwitz. Here is this German pope going to Auschwitz, an incredibly important, moving experience. And the day before, the chief rabbi gets attacked in Warsaw by an anti-Semite, by a Polish anti-Semite. So there was a tremendous sensitivity. In a very meaningful way, an important way, the government took it very seriously, very quickly. They actually caught the guy, which is very hard to do. Was served 2 months in jail and then received a 2-year suspended sentence. I don't know anywhere else in the world that somebody got 2 months for pepper spraying somebody in the face. And more importantly was the response of the leadership of Poland. The prime minister called me immediately after Shabbat and said, "What happened? Are you okay? What can we do?" The president invited me on the following Monday to the presidential palace to make a very public statement in front of the Polish news media. And it wasn't the world media. It was the Polish media saying, "This is unacceptable in Poland today." And this is what I've really heard from successive Polish governments since 1989. Anti-Semitism today is unacceptable.
You know, I wonder if your response got as much attention. It sounds like the attack itself was really what was really the focus of all of the attention of it. But your response of fighting back struck me as interesting. And I wondered if you or others saw it as kind of a message or a metaphor of fighting back, not being passive in this place where millions, you know, had suffered extermination in a different generation.
it's very hard to comment on myself. Reality is in the moment of when it happens, you're working not on intellectual level. You're working on certain things that are so primal inside of you that they just come out without even thinking. And I have a real allergy at people hitting me. And it's clearly my response, having grown up in a fully democratic, pluralistic society here in the United States, that when somebody does that to me, I respond in the way that he has attacked me. And if he hits me, I'll hit him back. And even the truth is, when I saw him later in a police lineup, I took a look at him and I said, this guy is like a lot bigger than I am. And I said, did I really hit that guy back? And I don't know why I did it, but I guess it is in a, I know why I approached him. I don't know why I hit him, but I do know why I confronted him verbally, is that too many good people are silent. The problem never in society never is the evil person, because society is always going to have evil. I don't know why, but it does. The problem or the collapse of society happens is when the good are silent. And so very much I try to live my life and to teach my community that when you see something wrong, you have to react. You have to speak out, and at times, even to punch back.
You know, you've devoted a good part of your career to rebuilding the Jewish community in Poland. And I wonder, is that mission a matter of making it safe to be Jewish in Poland and building a vibrant community there? Or is all part of it also a statement to the world to reconstitute a presence in what really was for centuries the Jewish homeland of Europe?
No. For me, the most important thing is the individual person. This person has been denied access, information about something that is in his past, the Jewish part of his past. And so my first goal really is, even before rebuilding a Jewish community, is rebuilding Jews, giving these Poles with Jewish roots a chance to find out what it means to be Jewish. And along the way also, I have a great amount of affection now for Poland. I know a lot of Jews find that strange, but I've seen a part of Poland which unfortunately many Jews have never had the chance to see, and that is this part of Poland that wants to be pluralistic, is pluralistic, treasures the fact that Jews played such an important part in Poland. And that may seem to be heresy to some, but there are such Poles out there. And while we need to identify and always fight anti-Semitism, and I think that from what I did last year, I certainly think no one's going to argue that I do that. But on the other hand, if we only identify anti-Semitism and we fail to nurture, to support, to empower those natural allies that want to also fight anti-Semitism within the Polish community and want to preserve Jewish culture and tradition, then we're making a huge mistake.
People who weren't aware of their Jewish heritage for years, even decades, probably held a lot of stereotypes about Jews. And I'm wondering, when they discovered that they were in fact Jewish, was there a weird thing where they felt compelled maybe to embrace a stereotypical view of what a Jew was?
It's very varied. I mean, I could share with you very quickly one story, which is probably the most unusual of all the stories. There's a young couple, and now they're now 30 years old. They met and fell in love in high school. They got married right out of high school. When she was 20, she discovered she had Jewish roots, but it didn't mean anything to her. At 23, she decided she wanted to do something Jewish. She decided every Friday night she's going to make a Shabbat dinner. And her husband went along with her. He said, okay, sure, why not? His parents got very upset. You can't let your wife do Jewish things. Don't. It's ridiculous, stupid. Don't let her do it. And the more they pushed on their son to be against his wife, the more he supported his wife. And finally, the parents admitted to the son, why were they against him, his wife doing Jewish things? It's because they were both Jewish. So it turns out he's Jewish, she's Jewish, the two little kids are Jewish. The interesting part of the story is that when they fell in love in high school, they were both skinheads. So it's very romantic. Two Polish skinheads fall in love, get married, and then one after the other discover that they're Jewish, and today are observant, very observant, very active members of the Jewish community of Warsaw. As a matter of fact, I have a title for the book not yet to be written, or the book yet to be written, and that is From Skinheads to Covered Heads. And so you can imagine the changes, the challenges. As a matter of fact, this young guy was very sensitive, said to me about a year ago, said, you know, sometimes, Rabbi, I look myself and sometimes I get up in the morning, look in the mirror, and can't believe that it's me. And so there are all kinds of issues, and including people who had anti-Semitic feelings about Jews discovering that they're really Jewish.
Wow, that's quite a journey. Well, Rabbi Michael Shudrick, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
My pleasure.
Rabbi Michael Shudrick is the chief rabbi of Poland. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.